You are. This is special coverage from WBUR in Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Every day since September 11th, Americans have learned something new about anthrax, about the politics of Afghanistan, about the Muslim religion. All over the country, classroom teachers are throwing out old lesson plans and scrambling to turn hard history in the making into teachable moments. But what are they teaching? And how do you teach adolescents and children about events that adults don't fully understand? Special coverage correspondent Jill Kaufman has been visiting high schools. As she reports, current events have seldom seemed so urgent or so difficult.
September 11th fell 4 days into the year. Obviously, the events occurred when we were in school, so classes stopped. We spent the first day essentially trying to get some news. Day two.
Judy Freeman teaches a history elective to juniors and seniors at Boston Latin High School. She teaches about 20th century world atrocities like the Holocaust and the genocide in Rwanda. On September 11th, she was in the middle of a unit about stereotyping. For a few emotion-filled days, students did little but talk about what happened in New York and Washington. After that, Freeman tried to get back to her planned lessons. At the same time, she wondered if that was the best thing for her students.
This is crazy. I've had this sort of gnawing feeling all this time that we're not doing enough and we're not thinking about how to do it, and we're just trying to pretend that curriculum should go on with an occasional reference every couple of days to something in the news. We need to dedicate time to this and somehow just carve it out and dedicate it.
So on Fridays, Judy Freeman scraps her formal lesson plans and in all her classes talks about the war. The 11th and 12th graders wonder aloud about Osama bin Laden and why he hates the U.S. They're surprised peanut butter is included in the food drops over Afghanistan. They worry about anthrax and they're critical about how the media are reporting on the war.
The media screams for a week about, look out, you know, anthrax or smallpox or whatever's next. Hide yourselves. And then they say, well, no, don't get all excited. And so Michelle just made me wonder if in 30 years they're going to make a movie about this.
And with the anthrax thing, I think it's just turning us all against each other, because it's like you're not only afraid of planes flying over you, you're afraid to touch your mail now, too. And everyone, you know, you're sort of looking around at everyone, and it's just creating more disunity. And I really think that anthrax is done by Americans.
But my thing is, we are not the U.S. government. The U.S. government is bombing Afghanistan. I'm not. In fact, I'm opposed to the idea.
Most students in this class are opposed to the idea, but when Margaret Willison has said as much in her other classes at Boston Latin, she's been ridiculed for her viewpoint.
I felt attacked, and people were automatically put onto the defensive when I would say, I don't think we should be bombing, I think it's wrong. They shouted at me, they'd call me unpatriotic, they'd talk to me, sort of talk down to me like I was stupid, like I wasn't realizing something that was so obvious.
As tragic and upsetting as the unfolding events have been since September 11th, high school teachers say this war offers a teaching opportunity they are hard-pressed to pass up. Larry Veria teaches social studies at North Kingstown High School in Rhode Island.
Does that make sense to you? That's what's being argued here with this cartoon, okay? Now, you have readings that support that. I would encourage you to find that factual information to get that into your report, okay?
Students in Larry Veria's classroom are broken up into groups of five or six. Each group must make the argument for some policy the U.S. should take since September 11th, whether or not members of the group actually agree with that position.
We are option one.
We're the position that basically states that we should go find Osama bin Laden and bring him to justice by any means necessary without waiting for another attack to happen on us. We have to convince our class that we shouldn't be peaceful and that we should try to stop all the terrorists in Afghanistan or wherever right now.
Another group has to build an argument for why the U.S. should opt to address the underlying causes of terrorism and not enter into military action. Unlike Judy Freeman's history class, the students here are generally in favor of the U.S. bombing Afghanistan. Larry Veria says his students normally complain about the rigors of his class, but they have no qualms right now about what they're learning, and they're finding relevance in talking about the Crusades or the Ottoman Empire or the United States' past support of the Shah of Iran.
It's all the more interesting to study because it's happening.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's not in the past.
Yeah, I think it's so much easier to learn and comprehend.
It has something to do with our generation. Yes. You know, we sit in history class
learning about what happened in like 58 BC, you know, and really that's all boring to us because it really has nothing to do now what we're doing. But now that something's actually happening in our own generation,
we have an opinion. Yeah.
We have an opinion, and we're going to see what the outcome has.
Yeah, it's really easy to relate to what's going on.
Because it happens to us, and it doesn't happen to our grandfathers or our parents.
We're actually living this history.
There are no textbooks yet for teaching about a war on terrorism, nor, some say, the luxury of waiting for one. Teachers have always had the responsibility of being a resource for content, but now, to prepare for school, history teacher Evelyn Bradshaw at North Kingstown High finds herself doing what so many other people are doing, surfing the Internet, reading newspapers and watching television to learn more about Islam or bioterrorism.
Teachers weren't prepared for this, and we're learning as we go along, and it's a difficult time for us also. And I'm trying to find the information, not frighten anybody, and get people to look at it from all perspectives.
Not all teachers are choosing to address the conflict. Those who do are careful about bringing their opinions into class. Art teachers spent the first weeks after September 11th teaching expressionism, asking students to paint what anger and confusion look like. English teachers are having students read and discuss W.H. Auden's poem September 1st, 1939, which Auden wrote in response to Germany's invasion of Poland. Some teachers are traditional and give lectures. Others are creating discussion groups. Dana Tatlock at the Wheeler School in Providence teaches 12th grade contemporary world issues. Her students are wondering what role the U.S. took in Afghanistan after its war against the Soviets. They also wonder if the U.S. is being scapegoated. Dana Tatlock says she helps them find answers, but she doesn't prescribe them.
You know, my goal wasn't ever to come up with an answer to these questions, but really to get them to see it in a more complex light. And one thing that was actually fascinating about it was that kids, a couple of days before their papers were due, and we've been talking about it a lot, came in and said, our parents think that we're being totally naive or totally unpatriotic to ask these questions. So that actually brought up a really interesting dialogue about, is this unpatriotic to ask? Are we being naive?
I think the classroom is probably just the easiest place to talk it out.
Ari Savitsky is a senior in Dana Tatlock's class.
You know, at home, it's mostly through the media. And talking about it with my family, there's often that personal bias, and there's a lot of grief, kind of. The best part of the Contemporary World Issues class is just the forum to speak and the information and really being challenged to substantiate what we say with fact. And we've done a lot of research this year, and it doesn't feel like a lot, primarily because it's been necessary. And we really, you know, in order to get our point of views out there, we need to substantiate what we're saying.
As the war continues, educators wonder how much time they can afford to spend on the topic, particularly as they try to prepare students for standardized tests and conform to mandated curriculum frameworks. I'm Jill Kaufman.
This is special coverage from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook. We're talking in this hour about the role and responsibilities of schools, teachers, and students in this strange wartime. The concepts are big: justice, terrorism, civil liberties, evil. But how to work all that into a lesson plan? Students' questions must be huge, but so are everyone's, and the terrain can be a minefield. Joining us now is John Marciano, a professor emeritus of education at the State University of New York, Cortland, and the author of Civic Illiteracy, The Battle for Hearts and Minds of American Youth. Welcome, Professor John Marciano.
Thank you, Tom. Nice to talk with you.
It's good to have you with us. And from the studios of Vermont Public Radio is our special coverage news analyst, Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly Magazine. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom.
What should be taught about this war on terrorism? What do students need to know? Is there room for critical analysis at a time of patriotic fervor? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-TALK. That's 1-800-423-8255. Professor John Marciano, it's hard enough for adults to sort out everything that's going on here. How do teachers begin to address this? What are the challenges?
Well, first of all, I might say that based on Jill Kaufman's report, that Ms. Friedman and Tatlock and Bradshaw and Mr. Verriet are raising the kind of issues that we would want young people to deal with. It seems that they are taking student questions seriously, that the students are asking a wide variety of questions, very profound questions about the nature of patriotism and a lack of patriotism. What is patriotic? What is unpatriotic? They're exposing their students to a wide variety of sources. And it seems to me that that's the foundation and the hope for thinking critically in the schools. I might just back up for a minute in our discussion of this to preface my thoughts with a thought from Martin Luther King. In 1967, Dr. King spoke out against the war in Vietnam in April 1967 at the Riverside Church. About 6 months later, he was speaking at the State University of New York at Buffalo, and he paraphrased a comment or quote from Victor Hugo, the French writer, that went roughly as follows. Where there is darkness, crimes will be committed. The honest social critic not only condemns the criminal, but also those who cause the darkness. It seems to me that teachers and citizens must condemn and help bring to justice those who planned this crime against humanity in New York and Washington, this atrocity. But also, if we were to help young people and ourselves think critically, we better ask some questions about who created the darkness.
John Marciano, are you saying that you suspect that's not happening? It sounded from Jill's report like it may be.
It is happening, but I would suggest from the fragmentary evidence I have, and again, I've been talking with some teachers around the country and trying to follow things in the media as the rest of us, reading the L.A. Times, the New York Times, various websites, that it appears, if the past is any judge, that what they are doing is probably the exception to the rule. I mean, they seem to be opening themselves up to having students question the fundamental policies of our society. And I think that's healthy for a democracy. But I would suggest from the work I've seen in my own activism over the years that that isn't a fundamental purpose that, let's say, the powers to be would want of American teachers. So it puts a tremendous responsibility on these teachers, and I certainly feel hopeful listening to what they're doing. And this is, again, a small sample from New England, so I don't know what's going on everywhere in the country.
But aren't the kind of dramatic events we've seen in the last weeks also a dramatic uncovering of issues? Isn't it sort of in a horrible way? I hate to say a teacher's dream, but it certainly brings things out and casts a very sharp, difficult light on issues that might otherwise just be glossed over.
I agree with you, but again, it depends on what actually happens in the classroom. Part of what's going on, of course, in the country, depending on the age level, is that teachers are trying to help young people, and of course, we're trying to help ourselves deal with the profound horror of what happened in New York and at the Pentagon. Let's say the emotional fallout, the affective lessons. Teachers are helping young people in communities raise money for the victims of the September 11th atrocity. At the same time, we know we do have fragmentary evidence, and we know from the past that there is a heavy dose of what we might call uncritical patriotism and following the government position. Because with all the demands that are placed upon teachers and the emphasis on testing and the fact that many of us are not up to speed about the events in the Middle East and around bin Laden or Afghanistan, it is an enormous job. And it means that one has to read critical kinds of challenges. So you're right. This is an incredible teachable moment. But I just ask it as a question. I mean, our teachers introducing people like Howard Zinn and Noam Chomsky in the classroom, Edward Said, the Indian writer Arundhati Roy, that then there's a wide spectrum, there's a debate. I mean, I liked what was happening in Mr. Variette's class where the students took different positions and had to defend them, because that really forces you to think critically and defend your position.
And yet it must also – excuse me, but we're coming up to a break. Sorry, Professor Marciano. It must be a time to think about how the nation pulls together in times of crisis. We'll come back to this. We'll look at patriotism in the classroom, unity, and also critical investigation. If you're a parent, what do you want your children to understand? If you're a student, what do you want to know? How's your school doing? What have you learned? And if you're a teacher, are you overwhelmed by this responsibility? Are you addressing it? Are you ducking it? Are you wading boldly in? What are your students asking? Join us at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. You're listening to special coverage from WBUR Boston. This is special coverage from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook. We're talking tonight about teaching the crisis in American classrooms, how teachers are rising to the challenge of investigating what's going on in a time when it's difficult for any of us to fully understand what questions students are asking and what parents want their sons and daughters to be learning right now. You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined by Professor John Marciano, a professor emeritus of education at the State University of New York, Cortland. He's the author of Civic Illiteracy, The Battle for Hearts and Minds of American Youth, and by our own special coverage news analyst, Jack Beatty. Jack, I wanted to ask you, when you look out at the American situation today and look at American history, what's your level of confidence that we'll have a good, vigorous debate and conversation about what's going on in this time of crisis?
Well, I think it'll be the brave high school teacher who bring in Noam Chomsky to talk about this.
Yes.
You have to recognize that, I think. Not that Chomsky hasn't called this a crime against humanity, but he's gone on to talk a lot about the U.S. role in provoking it. So that would be very – and in the past, it's been very difficult for teachers in wartime to even be objective about these matters. But, you know, there's a larger question here, and that is it is important, I think, for young people to learn how to think critically in the literal sense, how to look at something the government says and criticize it, how to criticize an official version of the truth. But it's also important for young people to feel loyalty to the institutions of democracy. There are two parts of education, it seems to me. One is to give the facts. The other is to somehow convey the spirit of why it is we should love this country with all its faults. What are we fighting for? What is America all about? And I remember my son's brush with high school history. I was just so disappointed in what he came away with from World War II. He knows three things. The Americans did not accept the Jews. They did not bomb the camps, the death camps, and they forcibly relocated the Japanese Americans. He doesn't know about the Battle of the Bulge. He doesn't know that General McAuliffe, when he was surrounded at Bastogne and the Germans said surrender, he said, "I've got one word for you, nuts." He doesn't know that General McAuliffe said that. He doesn't know about the 101st Airborne. He doesn't know about the Battle of Britain. He doesn't know about Churchill. He doesn't know about FDR practically going to the limits of impeachment to save the world. None of that. All he knows are these isolated facts about U.S. misdeeds in the war. And I do think there's a kind of intellectual myopia. We assume the young people have the main picture, but they don't. All they retain are these isolated sort of critical thinking facts that I don't think put them in touch with the full reality of the past at all.
Mm. Professor John Marciano, about it? This is also a moment to teach about democracy and freedom and in history about people who have sacrificed for those things, isn't it? Are you there, Professor Marciano?
Hmm?
Are you there? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
So isn't it a teaching moment also about democracy and freedom and the lives that have been laid down for those things?
Right, but it depends what...
We seem to be having a technical problem with Professor Marciano. We have callers who are joining us and want to join the conversation. Let's bring some of them in while we work to get him back. We're talking about this moment in American classrooms, how teachers, students, and parents are dealing with the challenges of answering questions that seem almost unanswerable sometimes right now. You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. Simon is on the line. Welcome, Simon. You're on the air.
Thanks very much.
Sure.
I'm a fourth grade teacher, and personally, I hold more to the Howard Zinn, Edward Said view that, you know, the United States is not just fighting terrorism, that there's a history here, that there's complexity to what we're doing. But it's incredibly difficult to present that to fourth graders who are looking for the most basic answers, who just want to know what's going on, who are scared, who are, as the speaker said a little bit earlier, are just being instructed in kind of Americanism and democracy and kind of trying to trust our leaders. And I've found it very frustrating to, you know, I say that Islam is not our enemy. I say that Muslims are not our enemy.
Mm-hmm.
But even to have any sense of questioning America is very, very difficult when they really, you know, as much as I respect them and want them to grow in kind of complex directions, when they're really not ready for the contradictions and the complexities that my particular view of what's going on in the world right now implies.
So, Simon, from your education, your own education in the process of education, fourth graders are, what, 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
How much are 10-year-olds ready and capable to take on board? Has anything prepared you for thinking that issue through right now?
Not really in terms of training or anything like that. It's been mostly my own initiative in bringing it into the classroom. I use Time for Kids, which publishes very straightforward, and I view this is where Afghanistan is, this is what the U.S. is doing, this is what President Bush has said last week. And certainly, you know, there's no Howard Zinn for 10-year-olds.
So are you finding that your fourth graders are bringing big questions or mainly big fears from this current situation?
Mostly big fears. I mean, they ask, you know, are we going to be attacked? What's going to happen? They do take a kind of glee in warfare, which I think is, you know, I certainly came from a very progressive household and remember, you know, surreptitiously buying little plastic BB guns. but they, you know, they like the idea that the U.S. is going out and getting them. They like the wanted, dead or alive, you know, Bush kind of view of the world. And they don't come in sort of wanting to know why this happened, really. There's a little bit of why do they hate us. But, you know, I do think that some part of the answer is they don't like democracy, they don't like diversity. But, you know, there's also the U.S., you know, the history of the Crusades. There's also the history of the U.S. and Britain in the Middle East. There's also oil politics. But how much, you know, my kids don't really know what oil is in terms of, you know, how important it is to our economy. How much preparation can you do before you can get to that?
Right. And Simon, to Jack Beatty's earlier point, do your textbooks or your lesson plans alert your students to the heritage of democracy and freedom? Are they aware of the relationship between America and these ideals?
Oh, very much, very much. I teach at a school that, you know, adheres very strictly to Massachusetts kind of curriculum frameworks, and a big part of that is teaching about, you know, the pilgrims and the colonies, all that. At the same time, my kids are mostly Hispanic immigrants. Most of their parents were not born in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Many of their parents don't speak English. And so there's also a even more basic acculturation that is, you know, as is traditional in America, done mostly through symbols, through, you know, we do the Pledge of Allegiance every week, there's
right.
flags.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's so it's even more difficult to bring in kind of
the counter
a little
view.
Bit of a darker side, exactly. Mm.
Simon, thanks very much for your insight into a fourth grade situation. I think we've got John Marciano back on the line now, do we?
Yeah.
Hi, great.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. And we're sorry we missed you out for a little bit
it's okay.
there.
Okay, hey. I'm in Los Angeles. You're in Boston. So,
we had a good conversation with a fourth grade teacher here who was saying.
I heard him.
And the point he began with was, John Marciano, that he had difficulty raising a more sophisticated or critical view with students at that age. You taught education for a long time. What are the kind of developmental stages? He's saying his students bring mainly fear to class. At what age can students begin to take on a more nuanced and critical view of the world?
Well, I don't know whether there's a magical age. I mean, clearly, I mean, I really like, if Simon's still listening, I really liked what he had to say, so I hope he continues to do what he's doing. At a certain age, clearly the concerns are going to be emotional with kids. I mean, I think we're really talking about older children in middle and high schools. Mm-hmm. And when I talk about teachers, I talk generically. I'm talking about college also, because there are many college students who manage to go through without being exposed to any of these ideas. But I'd like to jump back, because Jack raised some very important points before.
Yes, please. We'd like your response
And then we all got cut off. One being the simple basis of knowledge that one needs to think critically. Diane Ravitch and Chester Finn, far more conservative than I am, in 1987, did a book on what do our children know, or what do 17-year-olds know, in which they made the argument that many young people who are juniors in high school don't know the basic facts of American history. And Jack's right. Many of us growing up didn't learn all sorts of things. And so how can I think critically about Afghanistan, bin Laden, or anything else if I don't have a basis of knowledge? That's the starting point. But the other issue that he raised, and I'd have to disagree with him here, is it's not democracy and freedom that shows their faces abroad. We have a tremendous amount of democracy and freedom within the United States. But if we really have a love of country and a love of the ideals of the Declaration of Independence and a love of the struggles that actually Howard Zinn discusses in his book, People's History of the United States, mm-hmm. that open the opportunities for all people, for blacks, for whites, for Latinos, for women, then it seems to me that we have to ask whether there's a contradiction or a conflict between my love of country and my dislike and distrust of the government. It's not the country that's bombing Afghanistan. It's the U.S. government, and there was not a full debate in the Congress of the United States. There was no declaration of war. The Constitution says that we're supposed to have a declaration of war, not a declaration of resolutions. So I have a loyalty to tremendous things in my country, but I know that my country, my leaders, often in secret, in undemocratic, unfree ways, have shown a face that Americans have find revolting. And just that's where Chomsky and others are right, in Chile, in Guatemala, in El Salvador, in Iran in 1954.
Right. So
that's the conflict. And I feel that if you love the country and you love what it could be and you love many of the traditions about the country, you will be very critical and questioning about what our leaders do.
Well, Jack Beatty, there we've got the whole buffet, everything from Chile and Guatemala to your sighting of World War II, where Americans laid down their lives for freedom in a much more clear
and they did.
Contest.
And they did.
Jack, how would you like to be a teacher grappling with that entire range right now?
Well, I think John makes a very good distinction between the country and the government. And all I was trying to say was that I think education fails if it doesn't teach a love and appreciation of the country, of its basic traditions, because those traditions are part of really one of the best things in world history, not because we're special people, but because destiny played out the cards that way. We just heard about these Hispanic immigrants coming over here and doing the Pledge of Allegiance and being acculturated as our forefathers were. No other country in the world is built like this. I mean, we can go on and on. I don't want to sound the red, white, and blue, but I think it's very important for people's civic orientation to the country to understand why that country is worth, why people in the past were worth, you know, were willing to die for it. I mean, at the Battle of Belleau Wood, a Marine sergeant yelled out, "Come on, you bastards, you can only die once." What was inside that man?
Something made him say that.
Yes. And I think you can ask that kind of question and you can, you know, Scott Fitzgerald said it has to do with the fields and the rivers and the whole mentality of that, the warmth. But that, you've got to ask that. You've got to let kids understand why men would say that.
But it's not just fields and rivers. It's also ideals. And
yes,
we're asking a lot of teachers right now in conveying that passion of support for those ideals and also have open a critical view of what's going on in the world in this very difficult time. If you're a teacher, are you overwhelmed by this responsibility? Are you addressing it? Are you ducking it? Are you afraid to ask questions or are you wading right in? What are your students asking? Let us know. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Elaine is on the line. Welcome, Elaine. You're on the air.
Hi. Yes, I'm a parent of a middle schooler in eighth grade and a fourth grader, and I do think the teachers are pretty much ducking it. I think my children have a good sense of America, and they are part of the country, and what the person on your show just brought up is entirely true. You do question the government if you do have a love of your country, and they're being taught that love of their country, that intrinsic love of their country, but they're not, as I wasn't, as well in college and in high school, being taught the facts that we need in history. And we're being taught it, so we're falling asleep.
Elaine, do you hear your children coming home from school with questions or answers? How high is their curiosity right now?
I think they're curious. My daughter wants to ignore it because that's what she's been taught from the teachers. She's a little one. She's been told specifically that the people who did this terrible thing in New York are heroes in their own country. Ooh. That's the information she brought home from school.
Okay.
So that's what she was specifically told.
That's a lot to process.
I thought that was not a great answer. And I also feel that the teachers at this time should be showing compassion and kindness. And I think they're so probably confused and scared themselves. The kids are in a public building. I actually recently, last week, transferred my daughter to a Christian school.
Because?
The public schools just aren't doing a good job at showing compassion, showing kindness to the children and even in the way they treat each other.
Elaine, thanks for your call. Thanks for the insight into your household. John Marciano, what do you hear in this parent's view of what her children are and are not getting?
Well, it's hard to know in that short statement. I mean, first of all, those of us who are parents know that talking about what goes on in schools, even those of us who are teachers, talking about what goes on in schools with our own kids is difficult once they come home, because on one hand, you want to raise certain issues with them and help them become independent thinkers. On the other hand, sometimes as parents, we can tend to sort of fall into brainwashing our own kids. I think the one issue that she raised is an issue that goes to the heart of teaching. I think students, if they're going to learn about this event or any other tragic event in American and world history, ought to know that there are people in the world, certainly, who believe that those murderers of September 11th were heroes in their own land. That's a subjective view. On the other hand, we need to help students think critically and not fall into a moral relativism, but to provide the evidence that whatever people may think, I mean, let's face it, so most of the Germans thought it was fine to gas Jews in World War II. Now, we're not going to suggest that we enhance that view morally in American schools. So we need to understand the world through the eyes of the other, and that hasn't been done much. And I think after September 11th, we're going to be learning a lot more about the people we call Islamic terrorists, because many of us don't know much about Islam in those countries. Mm. But at the same time, we don't suspend our moral judgments as parents or as teachers. Where I, again, I don't want to belabor this, but where, again, I differ from Jack, and it's a wonderful dialogue. Maybe someday, Jack, we can get together and talk when I get back east.
Sure.
Is that it depends what you mean by teaching the traditions of the country. See, I would start from a different perspective, that all the great things that we now take for granted, in their time, were anti-traditions. We started as a revolutionary movement against the British. So if we had followed the government, we'd probably all be part of the Commonwealth. Most of the people supported slavery. It was the anti-traditional people who opposed slavery, and it was the anti-traditional people who fought for women's rights. So those now become part of our traditions, but in their time, they were opposed by most people. And
Professor
so
John Marciano, we've got to take a quick break. We'll be right back. We're talking about what American youths are and are not hearing, are and are not learning in their classrooms about the current crisis. What do you want your children to understand? If you're a student, what do you want to know? How's your school doing? You can join at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. You're listening to special coverage from WBUR Boston. This is special coverage from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook. We're talking this hour about what American students are and are not learning, are and are not hearing in their classrooms about the current crisis. If you're a teacher, are you teaching, and what are you teaching about the current situation, the war on terrorism, the attack on the United States? We're joined by Professor Emeritus of Education at the State University of New York, John Marciano. He's author of Civic Illiteracy, The Battle for Hearts and Minds of American Youth, and by our own special coverage news analyst, Jack Beatty. We also welcome you. We're at 1-800-423-8255. What are the lessons that young Americans are taking away from the current crisis? How well are they being tutored in the process by their schools, by their teachers? Allison is on the line. Welcome, Allison. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm a high school teacher, and we talk about the current crisis every day. My kids want to know about what's going on, and whatever I can't tell them right away, we learn about together.
So what are they asking? What do they most urgently want to know?
Why do they hate us?
Mm-hmm.
That's the question that I hear a lot, and it's a very difficult question to answer. I also try to help them to understand that we're dealing with extremists and that there are extremists all over the world of various different beliefs, and we can't generalize. And that's a hard thing when you're dealing with a lot of 16-year-old boys.
Allison, do you feel any constraints on what you say in response to their questions, or do you feel pretty free to say whatever you have in mind?
Well, I feel free to say whatever I have in mind responsibly. I am an extremely patriotic person.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm an English teacher, I have the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution hanging on my wall. And we always go back to those founding documents. And I agree. We were pretty radical in our time.
Mm-hmm.
And when you can help the students to understand that, they think the founding fathers are pretty cool.
So what about Professor John Marciano's point that that there's some tradition in the United States of not wholly opening that kind of ideology and the extent and radicalness of it to our students? Do you feel that they're being blinkered in what they're learning and being taught?
Not in my experience, not where I am. I think that the big problem is that teachers they don't want to get into it. You know, it's easier to say, well, you know, watch the news or whatever. You have to have the energy, I think, to do it, and it's hard to do.
Allison,
could I ask Allison why do you think teachers don't want to get into it?
Because they're afraid of the can of worms. They're afraid, I think, in many cases, of saying something that they might be misconstrued. I think that a lot of teachers don't feel equipped to answer a lot of these questions themselves. We are looked upon with a huge amount of respect, but we don't all know everything. And sometimes we don't want to open ourselves up to that.
Is the can of worms a potential kickback from parents and administrators if you somehow get off a script or something different, Allison?
Oh, no, there is no script. And I have never seen or heard anything overtly that you shouldn't say anything to your students that's off script. That's never been anything that I have seen or heard, and I spend a lot of time with a lot of different teachers.
Allison, thanks very much for your call. We've got a lot of people who want to join. Let's get to some more. Matthew is on the line. Welcome, Matthew.
Hi. I'm an instructor at Mount Wachusett Community College.
In Massachusetts, okay.
Yep, in Massachusetts. And I teach comparative religions. Islam is chronologically the last religion that we would get to because it's the newest. And yet when this happened on September 11th, I offered to the class to go ahead and start with Islam.
Mm-hmm.
And they voted overwhelmingly to do that. And now that I've asked them also to focus on one particular religion, about three-fourths of them have decided to do Islam. And have stated openly because they really want to know more about what's going on in the world right now.
So they want to dive in and come to grips with what we're addressing here.
They certainly do. And one of the other things I've introduced to them is the concept of an American civil religion. And we've had some very interesting discussions that we keep coming back to about the flag and about the symbolism that's changing and emerging with that.
Matthew, thanks for your call. Let's get one more before our time runs out. Anna is on the line. Welcome, Anna. Whoops. Maybe we've lost Anna.
Tom, could I?
Yes, please. Professor John Marciano, come on in.
In terms of what teachers are doing in the country and in terms of the issues that these wonderful folks raised, let me plug a couple of websites so they can get information from people who are, I think, trying to raise the challenging issues we're talking about. One of them, one website is rethinkingschools.org from the wonderful Rethinking Schools Educational Journal out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Another website is teachingforchange.org, which is the site of the National Coalition of Educational Activists. And I would also commend for educators at all level and parents the website of Alfie Cohen, the Harvard educator, has written extensively on testing issues and other matters, who had a magnificent piece on September 11th at his website, www.alfiecohen.org. Okay. At least issues to raise for people to think about.
A lot of resources there. John Marciano, we've just got another minute and a half or so. What thoughts would you send teachers away with as they go back out into what's not going to get easier anytime soon globally? What should they keep in mind as guiding lights when they talk to their students?
Well, I think, first of all, as teachers, we have to be informed, which means teachers have to read widely, have to listen to programs such as this, have to watch whatever they can on television, and especially challenge themselves by delving into material that may call into question their own views and values. The wider their understanding of the world, the more they'll bring these issues to their students, the more there will be a spirited discussion, the more students will benefit, and the more they will be informed and involved citizens in this country.
Professor John Marciano, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Thank you, Tom.
John Marciano is a professor emeritus of education at the State University of New York, Cortland. He's author of Civic Illiteracy, The Battle for Hearts and Minds of American Youth, and co-author of Lessons of the Vietnam War. Jack Beatty, we're talking about what teachers should make of this crisis and the war on terrorism, and events keep unfolding all around us. Even as we talk, only a couple of hours ago, you probably saw Attorney General John Ashcroft came on and warned yet again, without specifics, that there was a clear and present threat of some kind from someone right now.
Yeah, I don't know what's to be gained from that, but I suppose if they didn't do it and something happened, it would look terrible for the agencies. I mean, what is the point if they can't be any more specific than that? It's a strange business. I understand why they do it, but it kind of gets you coming and going. Be alert, but for what? Watch, but where? You know, it's a maybe that just defines our condition now. We've got all these forces impinging on us, and we don't know when or where.
But they must know that they'll take some heat for coming out with these unspecified warnings. They certainly did eventually after, I think, October 11 when they came out and said that. So there must be something pushing them other than just sort of covering, you know, in case it happens and you didn't say anything. But
yeah, you're right. If they've gone out on a limb here, haven't they? We don't want an event to prove them right either.
That's right.
John King on CNN, I had thought that the anthrax was what they were warning about. That was the second blow. But John King on CNN tonight said, no, that wasn't it. This is something else.
Something else.
So, scary.
And if you're a teacher trying to work that into your lesson plan tomorrow morning, they're as much on the front line as anyone else here in trying to figure out how to communicate and understand exactly what's going on.
Yeah, and I was just inspired listening to some of these teachers tonight. I mean, I feel the kids are in good hands just listening to them. It was heartening. One teacher raised the question of the American civil religion. This is a concept of Robert Beller's introduced in the 60s. And basically it means, you know, what are the non-religious things that make us Americans? And that teaching that is so important because only half of us vote. That's a big failure of education.
But that's the ideology that we better understand if we're going to be out fighting and dying for it around the world.
That's it.
Jack Beatty, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
You can find resources for teachers grappling with how to cover current events in the classroom at our website. Log on to WBUR.org. Click on Special Coverage. Now, dealing with the terrorist attacks from 3,000 miles away, three Seattle teens grapple with how their lives in and out of the classroom have changed since September 11th.
My name is Jennifer Cohen, and I go to school at Garfield, which is in, like, the central district of Seattle. And the whole, like, attack thing, I think it kind of changed our school a lot for, like, the first couple weeks because we kept talking about it in class, and, like, everyone was kind of, like, coming together and, like, feeling, like, really upset about the issue. But I think now that it's been a while, people don't really talk about it anymore. And I think that's bad because, like, I think now that we're, like, kind of retaliating, it's a good idea that people, like, know what's going on and, like, know the issue currently. Because, like, I've been talking to my friends and they don't even, like, know what anthrax is. And, like, I think that's really bad because people should continue to know, like, if the government's making good decisions about retaliating towards Afghanistan or the Taliban and stuff. I think people were more drawn to, like, what was on TV because it was so, like,
dramatized, and now that it's just like we're bombing and it's far away and you don't really see that much visual footage of it, it's not as entertaining and interesting to people. So it was good to have discussions in class like we had like the first few days that it happened, but I realize we can't like do that all the time. But I think that maybe if we just had like, you know, 10 minutes a day at least or something to talk about it, like at least in your like history language arts class, because we're doing a lot of stuff about media, and I think that this definitely is an issue about media, like as far as the coverage on the issue. So like if we talked about it more, just a few minutes a day, that would be good. People are kind of realizing that America's not totally stable. But at the same time, I think that we're pushing the patriotism too far. Like, we're not kind of, like, arguing what's going on enough as far as, like, attacking and, like, the president's decisions. But I don't think there's really a change in Seattle or the school itself.
My name is Cassandra Kirkham. I go to Garfield High School. I'm in 11th grade. It's like that every time you change the channel, there's something else happening. It's really scary to know that there's a lot of diseases going around that the terrorist people gave us. And, like, when I seen the airplane, I always get nervous because I'm scared I might run into something. My dad said I have, because I had the flu, and he thought it was anthrax, but because I guess we got weird mail, so I tested it, and I started getting, I had the flu for a little bit. It was, like, just a letter from, we don't know who it was. It was, like, a little box, and it was kind of scary, but it turned out to be, like, some coffee or something. My mom's real scared because she works at a hospital. She tells me not to go to, like, a big building, but I have to go to a big building sometimes, like Garfield, and she's kind of scared that we have, like, a lot of Arabian people here. I hang out with a lot of them. They feel comfortable about me hanging out with Arabian people, but they get kind of nervous. Like, when I say, oh, I'm going here with them, I'm going to the mall, and they get kind of nervous. That's all. Like, something might happen to me. I know this lately, a lot of people have been mean to the Arabians, and I don't think that's right. They be making fun of them and calling out their names, and they be like, let's leave, here comes the Arabians, they might kill us. And I be like, that's not right. Like, I eat lunch with some of my Arabian friends, and my other friends will move away from because they're Arabian, but I'll still sit there because it's not right to do that.
Hi, I'm a freshman at Seattle Central Community College, and my name is Andre Thomas. I haven't had any emotions about it until it affects me personally. I don't feel any emotion towards it. Till something affects me, then I'm just going to still keep living life to the fullest. I just thought, whoa, that was, you know, a lot for a big building to fall down and stuff. But, you know, a lot of people die every day, so that didn't really affect me like it affected the whole country. But I don't know, everybody's just thinking of revenge, and I don't think, you know, people should be thinking like that. By us just going to bomb another country, that's not going to do it. That's just going to make things worse. I think the whole world's changed. You know, a lot of everybody's getting more overprotective, more security-wise in businesses and stuff. And this situation will never go back to how it was. It will never go back to September 10th, you know, where everything was just normal and everything. They're always going to be a little overprotective. It's just, I'm still going to live life to the fullest until it affects me, though. You know, I'm not here crying or moping about it, the situation, you know. I'm just going on with life.
Jennifer Cohen, Cassandra Kirkle, and Andre Thomas live in Seattle. Over the next few weeks, you'll be hearing more radio diaries from around the country. We'd like to hear from you. Send your submissions by email to special@wbur.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. You're listening to Special Coverage from WBUR, Boston.